Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview this weekend's 2024 Chinese Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us. We're back to our usual cohort of trio, Mr. Timo Alvis-Daly joining me, as well as Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
Mercury retrograde's real thing.
That probably means something to someone. Timo?
I'm very well, thank you, and don't have whatever she's having, and I don't want it. So how are you?
I'm doing all right, not really affected by the planets being in places, although I'm quite tired. I spent the weekend at Goodwood for members meeting and it was absolutely fantastic. Some sustainably fueled racing, Jamie Chadwick out on track as well, absolutely bossing it in a Rover SD1 and a Ford Mustang. So really interesting stuff. So yeah, great weekend, excellent racing, and looking forward to the Chinese Grand Prix, which by all accounts should be providing some excellent racing. But more importantly, there is some news to dive into. And speaking of excellent racing, we must first turn our attention to IndyCar and Prema, who are getting set to join the series in 2025. They've got a two-car entry lined up with a Chevrolet engine backing deal. And with Théo Pourchaire lining up to fill in for David Malukas, who's still off at the next event, might he be a possible driver for the team next year following his Super Formula campaign, do we reckon?
He kind of needs to do what Ayumu Iwasa did in Japan in free practice and just have a really drama-free time of it. Admittedly, he's going to be in a race rather than in a practice session. Well, he'll be in a practice session too, but it's not just that. And just try and stay out of trouble. Long Beach is a notoriously fun race every year. And there is carnage is the only word to describe it, really. And as long as he can try and avoid that, and if he does DNF, it better be a mechanical issue on his part, because that will just help him a lot. And if he can have a drama-free weekend, then maybe it can't hurt his chances. And let's face it, he's more likely to get there next year than Formula One. And it's just nice to see IndyCar letting in a new team. Their CEO said that some of the tracks they'll have to figure out how to work out the logistics for adding another team there. But he went, it's quite a nice problem to have. Just kind of very tongue-in-cheek at F1 there, which seems to be just that ping-pong going back and forth with Formula E and IndyCar at the moment, just taking the piss out of F1 accordingly. Like, it's your turn this week, I think. You go and do that. You want to let a team in? Excellent. We will address you. Oh, we've already got them. No, that's all good.
It's workplace bullying in the FIA. Basically, everyone's taking a pick at F1. I mean, if you looked at like the leader sort of series from one of the more recent Formula E races, you've got about sort of eight different drivers that sort of clutter it in like the sort of coloured bars. And if you look at an F1 one, it's just Verstappen. And maybe so like
Formula
a small
e,
gap where he's pitted.
It's just had its first repeat winner of the year seven races in.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Formula One has had the same winner at all of them apart from one. So we're doing well. We're doing well there. Ellie Mae, you're sort of fringe of IndyCar, but obviously you understand sort of Prema and everything. Do you think this is going to be the excitement F1 needs to sort of go, yeah, maybe we should open up to another team?
I think we would like that, but I don't think it will happen. Because if you think how many different teams are, you know, sort of joining Formula E, whether they've either bought them out or just joining themselves, or, you know, same with IndyCar, Formula One still don't seem to be taking that stance. And I think it is, when you look at both, I mean, I don't know how all sort of like the money pots and whatnot work within Formula E and IndyCar, and how much the other teams really have a say in whether another team can join, because it all seems to be, you never hear really of anyone from any of the teams from IndyCar or Formula E saying, no, we don't want another team. Whilst you consistently hear that in Formula One, and it's, you know, usually largely down to the fact that then they'd have to share the same pot of money, but stretch out a bit more to add that extra team. It's kind of like, well,
I don't know the money situation for IndyCar just yet. I'm going to have a look into that. But you raised the point that I was going to say there of if any of them are unhappy about it, they've not been vocal about it. And that's something that's very noticeable straight away. And for me, at least for IndyCar and for NASCAR as well, it feels like if new teams join and they're worried about the money, they'll just have this approach of, well, we'll just go and make some more, then we'll get some more sponsors and we'll just slap some more stickers on the car and whatnot and just do it that way. And we'll make up the difference ourselves because we're a pretty good racing product at the end of the day. And we know we can make that happen. And some of the bigger sponsors won't mind spending an extra couple of quid if that's necessary. So it's interesting that maybe there is a money pot situation from the racing side of it, but no one seems to have complained yet. I don't think they will.
That's kind of a good point in that if you look at the money aspect of it, Formula E definitely doesn't have as much money as Formula One. But I have heard with sort of IndyCar, I remember sort of a snippet from Marcus Armstrong saying they earn so much more in IndyCar.
Yeah, I think IndyCar has the far greater understanding of itself as a marketable product. And if you look at what they had a non-championship race this season, which was like the million-dollar prize
million
pot,
dollar
whatever or
thermal
something.
Challenge, yeah.
Yeah, that's the and you look at it and IndyCar understands what it has in itself as a sort of marketable asset and just goes, okay, we want to support another team. We're going to find some more money. Sure, we've got a race that's on the calendar that doesn't even have points associated with the championship and has $1 million prize pot at the end of it. Like, we're doing fine. We can do that. You look at
and
the
neat part of
turnover.
That, just as a caveat, by the way, was that they tried out an entirely new race format for the weekend just to see what it'd be like. And crucially, it was a non-championship event. So if it was terrible, which amusingly enough, as a sprint format, it wasn't. F1 take note, there's another way you can do it without cocking things up, then that's the perfect venue to do it. And the other thing, just before I head back there, is that the other thing to make note of is that some teams, thinking it's Chip Ganassi this year, they've entered four cars into IndyCar because they can. And you're not really limited too much. I think you can, it's within reason, obviously, but you can have two cars, you can have three. That can switch from event to event if you want to try out a driver. And so, again, if you want that extra injection of cash in there, go for it. That's a great way to do it and keeping it flexible for everyone.
Yeah, I think the IndyCar's flexibility is testament to its success and certainly a keystone as to how it's achieved that financially. And yeah, there's a lesson to be learned from what they've been able to do versus what F1 hasn't or has almost refused to do. It's refused to sort of flex and make additions to its own ruling for its own benefit. And it's ultimately sort of forced itself into a corner where it's sort of turning away big names like Andretti, who've just announced or recently sort of there's reports suggesting that they're setting up an F3 and F2 team, Timo.
Yeah, this is, I just love the balls on them, to be quite frank. This comes on the back of the news that they've got a new Silverstone Park HQ. They're looking to hire 1,000 staff, which is close to the numbers that Mercedes and Red Bull kind of have. I mean, Haas have about just over 300, something like that. So again, in comparison, like Haas is considered a serious quantity because they're in F1. They're already aiming to far exceed that with the number of people they've got there. And like you say, F2 and F3 teams, which in theory, then you'd assume F1 Academy as well, just for the sake of you've got two of the three, why not? And the interesting thing I saw on that one for me was that they want to bring drivers that impress them in Indy next over to Europe and put them in there and have completely American drivers in all of their feeder series categories. Again, opening up that market nicely because we've not really seen that many Americans. It's only the last couple of years. And again, even then, it's not been, no offense against the drivers, but no one's impressed on a massive scale. And maybe that's just because we haven't seen enough of them there from the F1 side. I mean, you think of Juan Manuel Correa, he's done a brilliant thing with his comeback. But again, if you're measuring him purely in performance, maybe not there. Logan Sargeant, obviously, he might not have got that F1 seat if someone else had been available. But I just love the fact that Andretti are just going, right, you said we weren't serious X, Y, and Z issues. Maybe we weren't clear enough. And also, here's a massive check. Make this happen. And yeah, let's just see what we can do. And just kind of really specify that a lot of the things that F1 were accusing them of not understanding or whatever, they go, no, no, you misunderstood yourself about us. And to prove you wrong again, look at what we're going to do now. And let's face it, we might have done this anyway, but sod it, we'll just do it now.
I like the fact that they've got this understanding that, yes, if we're going to be in F1, we're going to have sort of junior drivers, reserve drivers, and it makes sense to have sort of a driver sort of academy. If you look at the success that Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull have had with theirs, the fact that you were able to have these sort of brilliantly talented reserve drivers spotted early on, but equally, I think one of the things that Andretti have done, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do, they've sort of said American drivers and offering them a ladder to the top tier. I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes drivers from the Americas. You look at the sort of wealth of underrepresented talent from Central and Southern America as well. It's really opening up this huge sort of pot of good racing talent to a new way into F1. And when it comes to sort of looking at being a more diverse sport, and these are countries that you race in, certainly when it comes to Mexico and Brazil, where are the Mexican and Brazilian drivers beyond Sergio Perez? And when was our last Brazilian
Well,
driver?
second
Sergio
Massa,
Sete Câmara?
probably.
Massa? Yeah. Like,
Massa.
or Felipe Massa? Yeah. Like, they are ages away in history, but opening up a team from the Americas, I think, is certainly a great thing. But
An interesting point that I've got a note here from some guests that were on for a Singapore Grand Prix preview, I want to say, race recap. One of their clever bots, Jonathan, he's pointed out this could be another way to just trying to get into F1, because this used to be a common path for F2 teams to climb up the FIA ladder. Jordan used a similar method to get their promotion to F1, so maybe they're thinking, right, if we can't get in through the front door, maybe there's a side door or a side window that's open, and we'll just sneak in that way. And oh, look, oh dear, we've accidentally gone ourselves into Formula One. Oh, well, we're here now. Never mind, you can't kick us out.
well, Hesketh and March famously made that work. And equally, in the latest round of applications to F1, the ones that turned down Andretti, we saw HiTech also putting together an application. So it's not uncommon. And equally, Andretti have seen that
You
obviously
almost
HiTech.
wonder if Prema were watching HiTech and seeing how they would do, and if it didn't go well, then they'd go IndyCar and just go
IndyCar.
there instead. And if it went well, then they'd be like, oh, we forgot about this. We just want to hand in the paperwork late.
But equally, was it HiTech got nearly as far as Andretti did in the process? So obviously, Andretti are looking at what HiTech had and went, oh, well, they've got F2 and F3, and they're obviously running cars in F1 Academy.
It's that
So why
Mr.
don't.
Bean meme of just, I'm just going to have a little look over here and see
Yeah,
what you're
just
doing, and then
copying
just.
your
Da-da-da-da-da.
homework. But speaking of obviously IndyCar drivers from America, and obviously the prospect of Andretti having an F1 Academy drive, brings us on to the really interesting sort of topic of supporting women in motorsport. We love doing it. And an interesting legacy that F1 Academy has already laid down with Catherine Legg returning to IndyCar. And this is fantastic because she's returning for the Indy 500. She's competed at it before, and she's returning with Dale Coyne Racing with a Honda power unit. Pretty good outfit. So she stands a fairly decent chance of bagging some points here. Really interesting. But we obviously mentioned it when it happened with, which is the driver with the makeup sponsor in F1
Lola
Academy.
Lovelace was
Love, no,
Lola
Lola
Lovelace.
Loveenvos, and she's got Charlotte Tilbury as her title sponsor. We're seeing the first ever beauty brand to serve as a primary sponsor at the 500 with ELF or ELF. I don't quite know how that's said. But yeah, they're backing Catherine Legg. They've got the full livery on the car. And it's great to all of a sudden see this sort of leap of women in motorsport being taken seriously from a marketing and a sort of sponsorship point of view, an event that forms part of the Triple Crown of Motorsport, one that is of such high prestige that we're getting that level of backing there. So it's a step forward that sort of almost came out of the blue, but is a great sort of reinforcer that F1 Academy is making steps in the right direction, and it's already having impact in series beyond Formula One and its feeder series, which is great, I think.
It's definitely evolving motorsport into a more inclusive sport, where previously, obviously, sponsors were largely targeted at a male audience. And I would love, maybe it's a bit too soon to look at it, but I would love to just almost have a deep dive into the history of sponsors. You know, how we always like started off with like cigarette brands being like the really strong sponsors of F1. And now it's obviously they got sort of banned from doing that. And how we're now sort of, then you sort of have, I don't know, sort of what then came after sort of cigarette brands?
Oil.
Oil, yeah, oil
Yeah.
petrochemical companies like Petronas, Aramco, they're sort of the big ones at the
If you're
moment.
McLaren vapes, but in really small writing where you can't really see that it's simply alcohol.
Or if you're Ferrari, you just go for Mission Winnow, or simply if you look at their
Yes,
airbox, they
cyber stuff.
still run the no, Mission Winnow was actually an off branch of
No,
Philip
I meant
Morris
for other teams.
International. Oh, other teams, yeah, cyber stuff, but like, even if you look at it, you can still see the Marlboro sort of triangle on the Ferrari cars these days. It's hidden, but
Again,
it's
you just
there.
put it really small and
It's
then hope no one notices.
the color patterns and it's the shapes. Like tobacco is still there, but it's a lot more subtle. It's no longer just sort of West written large down the side of McLaren. But yeah, petrochemicals, cyber stuff, stuff like that. But there is certainly an interesting pattern of evolution of it because you sort of went from it being like companies that you knew sponsored you to go and do F1, hence the reason why we saw the likes of the drummer from ABBA racing a Tolman or something with ABBA written down the side pods, to sort of the stuff we sort of know and love from modern era. But yeah, it begs the question, where's the next wave coming from? I want to go back to the days when Durex and Bitburger sponsored, because the Durex and
We
Bitburger
don't have the
deliveries were
front noses for
fantastic.
that anymore.
No, I think that would have been fantastic. That's a
Why no
livery
one
that
did
should
that?
have happened.
If Eddie Jordan had still been owning an F1 team, you know he would
I want to see someone graphic that up. If anyone listening is good at graphic design, can you get one of the old like STR04s or
You're
the
going to
K-Twins
regret
or
that.
something? I'm not. I want to see it. It'll be funny as anything. But anyway, you know exactly what we're thinking of. But yeah, it's an interesting question, sort of what's the next step of liverying and brands tying in with F1? Because we've seen sort of cigarettes and tobacco and
Maybe it
alcohol
is
and
makeup.
men's
Maybe
stuff.
it's hair, maybe it's skincare. I would
Clarins.
love that.
A
Well, you see a
Clarins.
lot of the male drivers as well these days looking after themselves, and they come out with X, Y, and Z things, and then obviously you see it
Alex
kind
Albon
of
has a
going
sponsor
into.
that is a skincare company,
Well,
but
see, there you go. Maybe that's the next one then.
like, tell me
Anybody?
that is not a good color scheme. Sort of relatively smart navy, dash of white, little pop of red. That's a good looking color scheme.
And I mean, fashion has always sort of dipped its toe into Formula One branding as well.
Yeah, Tommy Hilfiger with Mercedes.
I'm saying, I mean, individual drivers as well. You look at Lewis, you look at Joe now, a couple of the drivers getting more into that sort of thing.
Yeah. If you could pick one personal brand, one brand that's associated with you, if you were to become a driver, which one would you want to follow you onto your livery?
Quarterly. Ooh.
Yeah, you're going to fill us in a bit more on that one.
Skincare brand that I use mainly. I mean, or I could pick Charlotte Tilbury that are already there. I'm either going skincare or makeup.
See, I maintain that I'd go McVitie's, but specifically Jaffa Cakes, because I think they're sort of what, like the what is it, purple and orange? I think would make a really cool livery. And you could do like a special edition one where you just invert the colors, or you do one of their flavors, like you do the lemon and lime one.
I like the
Actually,
idea that you paint all of the inside parts the color of
all
the
the
inside of
inside
Jaffa
bits are
Cakes, so that
brown.
when
What?
you
Yeah.
crash,
Yeah,
it
you
looks
crash
proper.
and insides of it are all orange, and you're like, what the hell happened there? Timo, which way would
Actually,
you go? Oh, go on, Ellie Mae. You've had a better idea, haven't you?
I have had a better idea because I would try and pick perhaps a sports fashion brand because typically a lot of the race suits are more for the male body, so we need more suits that fit more sort of into a woman's body. So I would do that. So then you could get more. It comes
Similar
more
to Puma
woman.
with F1 Academy and I think W Series as well, because that was one of the things they found when they first set up W Series was
Yeah, the race suits didn't fit.
no one makes race suits that fit women. So yeah, they quickly had to get, I think it was Puma that had to start sort of quickly making differently tailored race suits, which is quite interesting. Timo, if I push you for a brand, which one do you take onto your car because of the way it looks as a livery?
I'm not sure. I go back to a very early episode of this podcast where we were discussing liveries for cars, for teams that we would create. So I feel like if I could get a non-alcoholic beer company just for the livery possibilities of filling it up slowly over the course of the season along the side of the car to make it look like a full pint or vice versa,
I think
to
the
show that it
drinking
runs out of
idea.
energy.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure which beer company to go for that one. Carlsberg, probably.
If
Just for
Carlsberg
the,
did liveries, yeah.
yeah,
I
just for
think that'd be
that.
good. Yeah, because you could sort of have it styled like a glass, so you'd have sort of like streaks of foam running down it as the beer level progresses through the season. I mean, I
Because
think.
then I wouldn't have the green aero colours either. I have it white, so it looks like it's just top of the beer coming off it.
That'd be quite fun. Write in with your ideas. It's probably better than designing a condom onto the front of one of the sort of big prongy era SD
I
sort
mean,
of
I do
cars.
like the idea of if someone crashes into someone else front end first, if they've got that written on them,
Protection.
they'll go, well, there's no harm done.
Yeah, it's all right. I had protection.
Always then use
Take
the.
that to this race steward and say, I don't know why you're trying to punish me. Nothing damaged there. That's all good.
They could use, I mean, there's probably so many instances like, like with Verstappen and Hamilton's Monza
Oh, he
crash.
rear-ended me.
Just
Yeah.
use protection.
Yeah. We'll move on from that one. to something a little more serious, I think. And this is Renault, according to rumours coming out of Vimy and Enstone, are possibly looking to sell their Alpine F1 outfit. Obviously, we know this year they've been having a bit of a rough time with performance. The car is simply terrible. And they might be looking to get out. And one of the interesting conditions that people are reporting is that the new owners would have to keep the Renault engine deal. Interestingly, though, this loops back to where we started the podcast. Andretti, should they enter F1, would have had a Renault power unit for a bit, according to some of the predictions and rumours. So Andretti might not be as far away from an F1 entry as we fear, provided Renault does decide to sell up. And equally, but
the thing is, out of all the engines, though, do you want a Renault engine?
You stick your sticker on it and then just redevelop it yourself and go, well, we're not bloody using it, but we'll just say it's a Renault and just quickly do our own thing there.
And equally, how long is that contract going to be? Because eventually you get to 2026 and it's new engine regs. So A, you might get lucky and Renault actually understand what they're doing. Or B, you sort of go, team's mine now. Come on, Cadillac, let's go make an F1 engine. And it's fun. And you see what happens from there. But I don't know.
You say you have a partnership with Renault, but it's like a 1% partnership where you literally just stick the sticker on and that counts as being the partnership and you've just done everything else in Cadillac.
They take one Frenchman and move him over to GM headquarters and he goes, hello.
But he's a secretary. He's yeah. Not allowed to race.
I'm here to help you make an F1 engine. What's your job? I make the coffee. Like, ah, good. I don't know why that was such a terrible French accent. Anyway. We'll move on to news further outside of F1, and London's XL race for the Formula E roster is increasingly likely to be dropped, and reportedly Silverstone is a favourite to take its spot. This contravenes massively, though, with the idea of Formula E being sustainable to get to and actually enjoy as a sport, and the XL was well stocked with public transport links, making getting its fans there a green and easy prospect. Silverstone has none of that.
I mean, the XL does have great transport links, but the two times I've gone, there's been train strikes. So they have not...
The links are there. It just relies on someone driving them. But that's a problem outside of Formula E's remit. Unfortunately, Formula E doesn't meet with Nick Lynch on a regular basis to discuss train driver contracts. They're sort of different driver contracts. But the concept...
I think there's a double positive here, though, because... I mean, for me anyway, because I never liked the XL as a racetrack idea, the whole inside-outside, no. I just never... You got all right racing, I'll admit, but it was never something... You got to the end of the season and it was like, oh, we're doing go-karting inside, this is a bit of anticlimax. It just never really got to me. And if they go to Silverstone, or if they go to somewhere else, you say about the transport links, perfect excuse for Formula E to show F1 how it's done and help improve all of those transport links and find a green way of doing that. I think Miami was terrible during its first year and then had the opportunity to make it better, and if you heard from people on the ground that it then improved a lot for how many Grand Prix we had the next two then. And I'm not saying it's going to be an easy challenge to deal with, and it's going to be, but it should be straightforward if not easy. And hell, I'd rather see them making it work at Silverstone than just going inside-outside all the time. Go somewhere else in London.
Go somewhere else in London, like bring back Crystal Palace or something, I don't know. But certainly...
Well, they did something around one of the parks in the very first year. I can't remember whereabouts in London that was, but that wasn't a bad street race, from what I recall. Just do that instead.
I think that it probably doesn't relay on TV, but when you're there, being indoors creates a really great atmosphere.
It creates that sort of party event atmosphere that Formula E sort of thrives on, I think, a little bit.
The trouble is that the audience watching at home is going to be bigger than the better people who were there in person. So, and also, aside from the bit inside, there's not that many viewing spots outside, are there? Like, there's a couple, but it's not like every bit of the track is covered and you're having to watch it on the screen unless it's coming past you on the start-finish straight.
But you could say that about any circuit. You don't see all the action.
It just feels proper if you've got an outside track. It just seems silly having a track inside.
The problem of Miami is a great one to use an example for enhancing public transport links, because you can just lay on more bus routes and more bus services. The problem is you can't really do that with Silverstone, because it's in the middle of chuffing nowhere. Like, if you want to get to Silverstone...
A solution Andretti will solve it, and that'll help them get into F1 because they'll just figure out a way.
It's asking a lot of Andretti to try and sort of solve the solution of there being maybe one bus link that goes past Silverstone every half an hour on a weekday, if you're lucky.
You watch them do it, though.
It won't happen. We just cancelled HS2, and that's supposed to be linking two of our biggest cities.
Andretti will pay for that as well.
I don't think Michael Andretti's got a budget that covers that.
I mean, where's the nearest... Where's the nearest train station to Silverstone?
Northampton, I'd reckon.
Which is what?
About 12, 20, somewhere in the range of 12 to 20 miles away by bus, if you're lucky at that. Let's have a quick look on Google Maps.
It is awkward.
It is a pain in the ass to get to if you do not drive. And even then, if you do drive, you're limited by parking.
You've still got to queue up for hours and hours then.
Let's see.
It would be interesting to see where the actual train line goes and as to whether you could create a station for Silverstone itself.
Well, here's the thing. I don't live all that far. I live about 45 minutes to 50 minutes away from Silverstone by car. My best means of getting there by public transport is by taking three different buses, and the last bit of my journey is a 15-minute walk. There is no train options that pop up, and I live on a major train line. So that tells you most of what you need to know. Your nearest
park.
Major train station is... That's a road. It is... No, that's not got a train station to it. It is Milton Keynes, maybe? Or Northampton. Yeah, it's Northampton.
You'd have to get, obviously, the train to Northampton, which I imagine isn't easy. If you probably take me trying to get there, it would probably mean me going from Bristol to London to Milton Keynes, to then Milton Keynes and then Hope or Northampton and then Hope that they then put on a buses. Bus.
Your other option would be head to maybe Bicester Village or Bicester North or Banbury and get a bus from there. But again, you're still looking at sort of nearly 45 minutes to an hour on a bus, because even from my home, it's a 2.5 hour bus ride or 45 minutes by car or even less by
helicopter. Battersea Park instead, then. There you go.
Battersea Park or Crystal Palace. Bring back the old Crystal Palace GP3 circuit. That'd be fantastic. Anyway, we'll move on to some actually F1 related news. And Timo, we've got the first contract signed of this year. We've got a contract signed.
Fernando Alonso seems to have made a good decision, which is just so unusual for him with the team. He's not bailed out after 5 minutes. He's re-signed with Aston Martin, which will see him race with the team into 2026. But interestingly, the team have said that it's the longest contract he's ever signed, which means more than 5 years. So that could be an overall driver deal, which with Aston Martin, that sees him jump into other categories willy-nilly as soon as he wants to and just do all that sort of thing. And maybe is another way for him to try and convince them to get into IndyCar so he can go for the Triple Crown again. Or he goes into an advisory role of some kind and kind of transitions out that way. And it's an overall nice deal there. And he just helps propel the team forward. Or he's in F1 for at least another 5 years, which is not a bad prospect either, to be honest, if he keeps going on his current form. And yeah, by the time Fernando completes the 2026 season for Aston Martin, his career in F1 will have spanned more than a third of the World Championship's entire history, which is such a Fernando Alonso thing to do, really. Out of 1,173 Grand Prix, assuming F1 sticks on the 24 it's got per season, hopefully it doesn't, but there we go, he'll have entered 452 of them, which are not too bad. And yeah, he had 2 years out of the sport at that point. And it's news that sort of makes everyone happy at the moment. I mean, if I go back to our friends over at Race Recap, they're both pretty much agreeing with us, saying it's probably the best move he could have made for his entire career. And a bit like Lewis, it's likely the last team he'll be with until the end of his stint in F1. And yeah, I mean, as long as Lawrence is there, he's going to pay him the big bucks. Alonso can just focus on doing what he does best, which is the racing. And it's going to be interesting to see him partnering back up with Honda, and hopefully it goes better this time around than it did last time. And nice to know that despite the disastrous partnership there, it's not kind of prevented the two from working together or potentially working together in the future. It's kind of like, it's all water on the bridge, it's all good. And yeah, he didn't seem to relish the idea of being Mercedes' backup option or potential replacement for Verstappen at Red Bull if things do go haywire there and we get the rest of that drama whenever that comes out. And yeah, I mean, we're talking beyond F1 and jumping into other racing that isn't him just trying to get the Triple Crown. They're going to be, he's going to be useful for them in their hypercar class in WEC next year because he's obviously had experience there. And it's kind of, yeah, just, it's a great deal for everyone involved. And he is definitely the chess piece that they need to keep making themselves a Grand Prix contending team and a championship contending team. The one domino that still does need to fall, which is probably going to be the last one because they'll try and sort everything out before getting into where we all know where this is going, is who do you put in that second seat, because it really shouldn't be Lance. If that's the driver you're going to need to get rid of if you want to be a serious contender.
I'm going to carry on your chess analogy quickly, because yeah, you said that he's sort of very much the king piece that you need to get into place. I think Lance, unfortunately, given his performance and looking back at
he's that one pawn Japan, on the board that's wondering how he's still there.
it's like trying to play chess with a king and a pawn, whereas at least if they did the sensible thing of taking Yuki Tsunoda, you could at least have like a king and a rook or a king and a bishop, maybe.
Well, even Drugovic, poor man, and yeah, still waiting in the wings there. So like, just, well, at least predict him in for a season next year. If he can show his potential, then great, keep it there. And if not, you can find a more experienced driver like Hülkenberg, who might be out of contract by then.
I mean
he's out of contract this year, but you know what I mean.
Even if you go by the reported Hungary test times from the private test that Aston Martin did with Jess Hawkins and Drugovic, Hawkins would be a better shout than Drugovic. But they're fighting with one hand tied behind their back, I think, with Lance. And they said, oh, we'd be looking to keep Lance because he provides invaluable technical and development advice.
Stick him in the sim, then.
And then you sort of look back at the advice and the performance he gave in Japan, where they're like, we've stuck you in softs, you're 30 seconds behind Tsunoda, go get him, you can hunt him down.
You know,
12 laps later, he's crying because he's cooked through his tyres and Tsunoda is further away than when he started. And you're like, how? How are you keeping
him under the
guise? Yeah, how are you keeping under the guise that he is here for technical development when he can't chase down Tsunoda? There's your guy.
The technical development being, here's what not to do. So
yeah,
don't do that.
They're essentially sort of operating off sort of like a blind negative, sort of going, well, that didn't work, we'll do the opposite. Ellie May, you had a point that I cut you off from.
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, Fernando Alonso thinks about Fernando Alonso first. And at the minute, staying with Aston Martin and it being with Lance Stroll, he knows that Lance Stroll isn't a threat to him. He doesn't have a situation where it's like him and Lewis Hamilton. He is basically number one in that team and he doesn't have a threat. That keeps Fernando Alonso very, very happy. And then when they do eventually, and they probably will, because, you know, Lawrence Stroll is putting so much money into Aston Martin. And, you know, you see that although it's sort of plateaued at the minute, you see the rise that they have taken over the last couple of years. I think they have it in them to get there, and Fernando Alonso knows that when they are there, he hasn't got someone challenging him for that championship.
Unless they do what they should do a lot sooner and sign Carlos Sainz up to join him next year, in which case that could get quite fun.
We'll wait and see what happens on that front. However, Fernando Alonso sticking around for so long does mean that he'll get to enjoy the 2025 calendar, which has been announced. And, well, it's a mega one. We've got 24 races starting on the 14th of March, and our final one is on the 7th of December. So it's a long old slug. And we open up with Australia once again at the start where it should be, and then immediately go to China the week after. There is then a week gap, and then we go to Japan, Bahrain, Saudi as a triple header, 2 week break, Miami, 1 week break, Imola, Monaco, Spain, 2 week break, Canada, 1 week break, Austria, UK, 3 weeks, then we go Belgium, Hungary, then we go 4 weeks, Netherlands, Italy, 2 weeks, Baku, 2 weeks, Singapore, 2 weeks, Austin, Mexico, 1 week, Brazil, 1 week, Vegas, Qatar, Abu Dhabi. So, and interestingly, Australia through Saudi Arabia, so those first five races plus the week in between, essentially happen in the span of a month. So within sort of what works out to be pretty much sort of 31 days, we get five Grand Prix shoehorned into it. And then There's a week break on either side of Brazil, and then you hit the Vegas Qatar Abu Dhabi slog, which is going to be brutal on teams and drivers, plus two summer breaks with Belgium and Hungary in the middle. It's still a mess, and it's still got Miami and Canada as standalone flyaway races. I know we've tried to
The
streamline
bit
it,
that I
and
don't understand the most there is why Miami and Canada can't at least be back to back. If they're going to be in that obscure portion of the calendar anyway, why not make them back to back?
why not just simply put Miami a bit later if you're worried about the weather in Canada? Just do it a bit later and have it as a really hot race or something, or a really humid one with the potential for rain in the afternoon. That would be exciting.
The only saving grace from the triple header at the end is at least Qatar and Vegas are the other way around. And it's not going to be Qatar to Vegas to Abu
Abu
Dhabi or
Dhabi,
Brazil
yeah.
to Vegas to Abu Dhabi as it was last year, I think.
It's a bit more globally sort of logistics streamlined, but it's still a
Still
mess
needs
of a
work.
Canada. Yeah. And sort of having these sort of ridiculous sort of race 2 weeks, when you've got so much to cram in, it just draws the season out over such a long period of time. It's a bit silly, from my opinion. It's a step in the right direction, but it's still a bit daft.
I will take it because Australia's back at the start and it just feels right that that should be there. And it feels right that the first time we get to see Lewis Hamilton in Ferrari Red is at the Australian Grand Prix as a season opener. There's just something that feels very right about that.
We'll move on from that then to the Chinese Grand Prix, which you've already mentioned is back. It last happened on the 14th of April 2019. So it's been a little over 5 years since then. So if we wind the clock back to the 14th of April 2019, weirdly enough, my metric for this is Avengers Endgame hadn't come out as a film. That happened on the 24th of April. 70% of today's grid were in F1 and on the grid. Logan Sargeant and Yuki Tsunoda hadn't even started F3 yet. The season for F3 that year wouldn't kick off until Spain in the May. Oscar Piastri was that time, yeah?
How old would they have been until then?
Five.
17 or something ridiculous like that. I want to hazard a guess. How old is, let's see, Logan Sargeant is born in 2000, so he would have been 19. And who was the other driver? It was Yuki. Yuki's even younger. He's 2020. He was 2001, wasn't he?
Is
Yuki
Oscar younger
Tsunoda.
than?
Yuki Tsunoda also 2000, so he would have been 19. And Oscar Piastri is a 2000, and I'm sure of it. His year of birth is a compound sentence. He's 2001, so he would have been 18. Yeah, so Oscar Piastri was in Freca at the time, Formula Renault Euro Cup, and that weekend he was racing in Monza, which it was a support race to something else. Zhou was in F2 with it at this point, which had not long had its opening round in Bahrain. He had qualified 17th, but came home fourth in the sprint behind winner Luca Giotto. Sergio Seta Câmara was in second, and Nicholas Latifi was in third. In the feature race, he came 10th and scored fastest lap, and Latifi won the feature race. What a different time that was indeed, when you could have Nicholas Latifi winning races. What a time. In F1 terms, though, Bottas was still at Mercedes, Vettel was still in F1 and at Ferrari next to Leclerc, Gasly was at Red Bull next to Max, Ricciardo and Hülkenberg were at Renault, Kevin was at Haas alongside Grosjean, Kvyat was in F1 and alongside Albon at Toro Rosso. Perez was at Racing Point with Stroll. Raikkonen was still enjoying his hobby and driving for Alfa alongside my sweet, sweet Antonio Giovinazzi. Lando Norris was in his junior year in the sport at McLaren with Sainz, also in his first year at Woking. George Russell was at Williams with Robert Kubica. Esteban Ocon was on a year's hiatus at this point on account of not having a seat that year, so it was just sort of bobbing around the Mercedes paddock. Max had just 5 wins to his name, and Lewis just 5 championships. Interestingly, you go on.
And Aston Martin were just a sponsor of Red Bull.
Yeah, they were a title sponsor of Red Bull at this point in time, not a standalone team. So very different times indeed. In the time since China 2019, we've seen 7 drivers come and go: Pietro Fittipaldi, Jack Aitken, Nicholas Latifi, Nikita Mazepin, Mick Schumacher, Nick DeVries, and Liam Lawson, plus an 8th if you include Ollie Bearman, but he still technically counts. He's actually on the
Seven
scoreboard.
drivers and Mazepin.
7 drivers plus one person who just simply paid to have a go.
And
Can't blame him. I'd do the same if I had that sort of money. There used to be 21 races on the calendar in 2019, and we've now seen the addition and departure of several tracks in that time too, with a calendar that's now not only got longer, but vastly different tracks that make it up and their order. In 2019, we used to kick off with Albert Park, something we'll be going back to. We'd also have a Russian, German, and French Grand Prix in the mix. Now we have multiple in the US and even less in Europe. So the real question I have for you all is, what were you doing at the last Chinese Grand Prix? So 14th of April 2019, what were you up to? Because for me, it was the Flitik 10K, which is a local running race. I ran it in 49 minutes and 10 seconds. It's not my fastest, but it's sub 50, which I think has always been my goal. And at the time, I'd have been in my third year at uni doing my undergraduate in zoology and tutoring part-time to make ends meet. So that's
What
where
were
I
you
was at. I was doing A-level and biology and GCSE, biology, chemistry, physics and maths.
Huh.
And then
I had to look through my photos to kind of give me any inclination of what the hell I was doing.
Your memory is great then.
Oh, because everyone knows exactly what they were doing on April the 14th, 2019.
Oh, I had to look back
Apparently
as
not.
well. I was apparently in the midst of doing a commercial law assignment, and I did an escape room.
Ah, that's
Yeah.
fun. Timo, you've simply written on the list of notes, "It's nobody's business where I was 5 years ago." So, sort of secretive as always.
He's
Well, you know, gotta stick to type.
Super spy. Super spy.
Yeah, that's a dated
I'll let you
TikTok
continue
reference.
with that as long as you want to go there.
That's the only bit of the song I know.
Don't even know if
Well,
there's
it's got
more
the
to
key
it.
parts to it, so that's the main thing.
Timo, you'd like to put in a word on Zhou while we're at this point.
Well, as it's the Chinese Grand Prix, it feels only right to mention him because whilst he's done kind of, he did a Shanghai drive in an F1 car and he had a little bit of a session at the Shanghai circuit. This is the first proper time racing there and definitely first proper time racing in F1 for him. And despite the fact that he's got 0 points so far this year, he is going toe-to-toe with Bottas. And that shouldn't be kind of undervalued. He needs to do better to stay on the grid in 25. That's obvious. But it doesn't necessarily mean points, just getting closer, and pit stops have obviously hampered him. But his qualifying to his finishing result in the race hasn't been too bad. I mean, Bahrain, he was P11, famously, because neither of the RBs could get anywhere near him. He went from the back of the grid to P18 in Saudi Arabia, which, okay, not admittedly the best thing, but again, from not having anything qualifying to staying there and just getting a good clean race in, not bad. He managed to get up to P15 from the back of the grid in Australia. Obviously, had the DNF in Japan, but not his fault. Whereas Bottas, he's at the bottom of the driver standings behind both Alpine drivers, and he should be making it a bit more difficult for Zhou in terms of a head-to-head thing there. You kind of expect that whilst the car is not the best, a driver of Bottas' caliber should be able to eke a little bit more out of it. So it's interesting that Zhou is at least kind of keeping up with him as such. And it's nice to see that hopefully through either the sprint or the Grand Prix itself, he can get his first points of the year at his home race, which will also be his first home race, as obviously we've not been there since 2019, as you may have heard earlier in the podcast. We made a little bit of mention of it.
I mean, yeah, he's got two chances at scoring here because, of course, we've got the sprint, which is great, which offers points down as low as 10th. I think, within reason, if Alfa Romeo get the car set up right, it's a big power circuit at Shanghai. We've got some massive straights, including that big one and the one down the front, the pit lane as well. So there's a chance for them to really bleed off some speed and sort of make up for some lost time when it comes to their points battles. But I think Zhou might have his work cut out this weekend because Bottas has already been going around the track practicing on his bicycle in the pouring rain. There's been some great spy shots coming out of the circuit.
That just shows he's clearly lost it and he needs to have his head examined.
No. He's working on his fitness. He's getting his lap times in now. He's getting practicing. Bottas is still taking this seriously, even if it means
he's going to be out turn one, lap one, both races.
Do you want to put that down as your wild prediction? I don't know what your actual one is, but it seems like a
I don't know what my actual one is, but I'm quite tempted to do that now. Just
Williams
it
in the
be,
points. Do you want to change Williams
yeah,
in the
mine's
points?
wider. I'll save Williams in the points for next time. There we go.
Yeah. So we're going to Bottas out at turn one. On both races
lap,
or just the
lap,
feature?
turn one, lap one, both races.
Turn
Now
one,
work all
lap
night to get
one.
that car fixed, and then his moustache will tickle him slightly and he'll just squiff off.
Danny Ric will try his former sort of big dive bomb move into turn one, and what it'll do is it'll wipe out Bottas this time.
We're going to ignore that. And do you think Joe kind of almost has, it's almost like the curse of the like Alfa Romeo Sauber seat that Giovinazzi had. Do you think it's just kind of the same situation again, or going to be?
What, you go up
It's
against
just a dove car.
you go up against a semi-retired Scandinavian and you struggle.
There's a title for a book.
It's certainly going to be a chapter in Giovinazzi's autobiography. Anyway, we've already flirted with them as such, but we'll dive into our predictions. And pole position, we've got a complete triplet of different ideas for this one. I've gone for Carlos Sainz. I reckon Ferrari might do all right here. They've got decent top speed, and I think the car's planted enough to cope with release from the tight corners. So I think Carlos has got a good chance here. But we've gone for two different drivers and two different teams between the two of you. Timo, yours is a little more wild conceptually.
Yes, but continuing very much with my trend this year of what I'd like to happen, because if it does, thank God we have something interesting going on in Formula One. So I've gone for Lewis Hamilton. He's done all that before in the final. It's not a secret there. I mean, there's not many tracks he's not gone well at, let's face it. So he's going to pick up where he left off almost and just have a really strong performance.
He went well last time in China 5 years ago.
So, you know, back to back. That'd be a fun back to back winning story.
Oh, would that be the longest time between back to back wins at a circuit?
We'll find out for the review.
What was the gap for Turkey? Did he win in Turkey and last time out in Turkey?
I think Massa might have done.
Oh, yeah, that's a point. We'll check that one for the review. Ellie May, your pole position prediction is a little more predictable.
Max Verstappen.
Okara.
Try saying that with a
if it helps you, Ellie May, both Nathan and Jonathan from Reese Recap have also gone route one with Max Verstappen as well. So you're in company. You're in boring company.
Hang on, I've got to ask a quick question. Have they both picked predictions, or have they picked together as sort of one accumulated?
No, they've
thing?
Both gone their individual predictions. I've got pole, podium, fastest lap, and a world prediction from them. Just to make your life that bit more fun.
I'm going to have to either add an extra column to the thing, or just sort of write them both into the same box.
Let's put them into the same box, or put a slash.
They both have to get
the lead guitarist of a band in there.
They both have to get their predictions for me to award the points, or if one of their predictions comes right, I can award the pair of them the point.
We'll let you figure that out later. That's not my problem.
Okay, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. In the meantime, the podium presents.
Thinking too much into it.
Yeah, I'm probably overthinking this a little bit.
Would do that, Ellie May. What are you on about?
Yeah, Ellie May's not one for overthinking. In the meantime, podium position predictions. And Ellie May and I start off... Actually, Ellie May and I are pretty close in most of ours. We both start with Verstappen and then both go Hispanic and then both go... I won't use that descriptor for the remaining options. I go Piastri, Ellie May goes Leclerc. We've gone Verstappen, I've gone Sainz, you've gone Perez, and then you've gone for the other Ferrari on the podium. Why?
Because... I didn't want to put Verstappen, Perez, Sainz and go for the exact same podium as last race. I'm kind of hoping for some form of variety, otherwise it's just the new Hambot there.
You want variety? I've got you covered.
We'll get to you, don't worry. You just don't want ver per side, basically, is the new Hambot there.
Yeah.
I've gone Versailles with Verstappen, Sainz, Piastri. I reckon we could see something interesting from McLaren here. And as always, it'll be one of those races where it just sort of, it's a bit too wacky to favour Norris. And as a result, Piastri comes out on top.
I hope we see a McLaren on the podium.
It'd be nice. Meantime.
So before we get to me, I was just checking the other predictions, the other two, and they've kind of also somehow managed to twist around the two of yours predictions in a way. You've got Nathan predicting Verstappen, Checo, Sainz. And then Jonathan predicting Verstappen, Leclerc, Piastri.
Interesting.
So there's twists.
Crucially, I've not been writing these down as you've told me them, so you're going to have to send me them later.
No, I'll message them, it's fine.
Yeah. Timo, though, your podium is quite ambitious. It's again, I'm guessing, sticking with the you'd like to see it happen so we have an interesting weekend sort of thing.
Yeah, and you know what? Charles has been fairly consistent this season, but he's not had a win yet, so he's going to win the Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz is going to rear gunner him in second place and show that, or to all his prospective new teams, that he can be an excellent team player when it counts. And then Lewis Hamilton's going to cling on in third. It's going to be at a bit of a distance, but it's going to be his third place, and we're going to see him on the podium.
So you're going to have Ferrari driver, next Ferrari driver, basically.
Yeah, triple podium. When's the last time that happened?
What happens to Lewis Hamilton and the fact that he loses out to two Ferraris?
Yeah, he starts on
pole quicker than him, and he's in a Mercedes in 2024.
You know, pretty what? Simple, I can't argue with that. just sheer lack of speed, which leads us into the fastest lap, where Ellie May and I again have gone route one. Verstappen, Timo, you're sticking with Sainz until it happens.
Famously, I've always said that it would happen at the Chinese Grand Prix that he would get fastest lap. So
famously, you also said that the Japanese Grand Prix, the Australian Grand Prix, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, the Bahraini Grand Prix, and probably the races before that too.
Those were all mere flukes and just warm-ups to the main event. We all knew it was going to be the Chinese Grand Prix. He was going to wait until we went back. It would have been last year, but we didn't go, and it would have been the year before, but we also didn't go. So we were waiting for 2024 to get fastest lap.
The worst part about this is that when it happens, you and I are going to have to think up a new stupid bit to do when you pick whichever driver comes next on your list.
It'll be Sargent. I'll be stuck with it. It'll be Abu Dhabi of this year, and then he'll get canned out immediately afterwards, and I'll never get the justification, never get the righteous feeling.
Sort of want that to happen, just to deprive you of that release. Wild prediction. This is where things get a bit exciting. Ooh. We've already...
Just quickly, Max and Leclerc for fastest lap from our friends over at Race Recap. So Leclerc is an interesting one.
Yeah. Be interesting to see what happens there. Wild prediction, we've already mentioned Timo's Bottas out at turn one, lap one, both races. Ellie May, I don't think yours is actually that wild. Given the weather forecast that is in place for Shanghai, you're simply going, Michael Fish is correct.
Oh, Ellie May, come on. You criticised.
I didn't look at the weather forecast and assumed it was going to be dry.
Bottas out cycling in the rain. Everywhere seems to be raining at the moment, including Dubai, which is under like a foot of water because you can't build drainage in the desert.
Isn't that like partly man-made?
Yeah, theirs is entirely a fault.
Doesn't excuse your point of not having a wild enough prediction.
It's raining everywhere in the world, and you've sort of gone, it will rain in Shanghai. You're going,
she subconsciously chose the most common thing to happen.
I didn't think it would happen.
Sounds like a pop folk album, Raining in Shanghai.
According to a country song, rain is a good thing because rain makes corn and corn makes whiskey and whiskey makes my baby feel a little fishy.
Which is lovely, and we can all get on board with that. But
I thought you were going down Eddie Rabbit, I Love a Rainy Night. Or Never Rains in Southern California.
No, you're allowing her to distract you from the wild prediction that she's not made.
It's called Rain is a Good Thing, I believe.
I'll put it on my playlist. Meanwhile, my wild prediction is Tsunoda outfinishes Perez. Look, it'd be great to see it happen. I think we can
He's
all
still not
on
made
that.
A wild prediction.
If you don't think that's wild, I'm...
No, just... not you.
We're forcing her to repick, are we?
It's going to be a wet race when it's raining everywhere. Come on.
Repick.
You know that she was on you for the wild prediction a couple of Grand Prix ago, and she did not let that go, so I don't know why you're being so kind. This is perfect for attribution time. You need the points.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Ellie May, repick.
There we go.
But what if it's a dry race, and then
Well, that's not a wild prediction either.
No, because if it's a dry race, then I've said it will rain.
Okay, so you're basically gambling on a 50-50, whereas I've gone for Tsunoda outfinishes
Perez.
That's
like me going with Carlos Sainz for fastest lap. Oh, if it doesn't happen, I don't get the point. Yeah, we know that's how that works.
That's how
doesn't
the game
mean
works.
The prediction is wild or not.
Right. Let's look at... Someone get the weather forecast
Let's up. Just make a new prediction, Ellie. How about that?
Get the weather forecast up.
Do you want Williams in the points? I didn't use that one this time. You can have that one for free. You don't even have to think about it.
AccuWeather, Shanghai. Let's see. Shanghai, Shenzhou, China.
Even if it says dry, just lie to it, Jesse.
Daily. Friday, pissing it down. Saturday, 25%. Sunday, 25% with changeable conditions.
25%. Come on.
I'm not letting
He's
you have
beating
it.
You into... Yeah,
I'm not letting you have it.
Beat you.
I've been talked out of Wilder.
And you remember how dull his world once were when you had to talk him out of them.
Yeah. Previously, the weather just used to be a segment we'd do, not a prediction.
Which you couldn't even be able to bother doing the review of it this time. She just guessed the weather, which, to be fair, a lot of it is guesswork anyway, but...
It's a science. Either you guess it, or we just simply won't award you points if it does or doesn't happen.
Or I'll make a wild prediction for you.
That's even
and
worse.
That's potentially more terrifying. Yeah.
That way you're guaranteed to not get the points.
Especially this year.
Fine. Joe Guanyu points.
Given
that's ambitious.
Given Sauber's ability to do pit stops, Joe scores points.
Especially fun if we're both right, Ellie May, because then Bottas is out both races and it happens.
I will now Sir La. if you've made me change it and it doesn't rain and he gets in the points.
I mean, ultimately, I don't mind. I'm just here to cause chaos. I'm not winning this anyway, so yeah. I'm just happy to capitalise on whatever happens.
We're willing to be proven wrong. We get an exciting race if we are. Our friends, what have they predicted for their wild predictions?
Yeah, Nathan has gone for 8 DNFs, as China is well known for its carnage into Turn 1. Bottas.
I like that.
And maybe there's a chance that the current generation cars will struggle on this track, which could see them suffer from reliability issues. So 8 DNFs is the key bit there. And while prediction kind of goes with that image a little bit from Jonathan, is that Zhou Guanyu leads a lap of the Grand Prix.
Ooh. So it's just sort of like a Sauber makes a bold call to put on inters or wets at the right time and it pays off and Zhou leads for a bit. We'll wait and see.
Leads on the final lap of the race and gets his points that way, all 25 of them. Or he falls down from P1 to P11 and just deprives Ellie May at the end. But he still leads at that.
We'll wait and see what happens.
Don't get your wild predictions. I hope you both get 0 points.
I'm guaranteed to get 0 points, don't you, mate? We know this by now.
This is what she's like when there's someone close to her in the predictions game. She gets very competitive. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, that's all we've got time for. If you want any more of us, where can we be found up until the Chinese Grand Prix?
Anyway, he's just going to be seething somewhere with some voodoo dolls, just putting pins in us.
Stealing the Saudi weather machine to make it whatever weather she wants it to be in China, so that way she gets to...
I don't know what the rain dance is for that.
Feel vindicated.
I think the lesser of two evils is me winning over Jesse, because I don't think we'd hear the end of it. I'm very sort of, you know, noble in my win.
I'd say there's a lot of words to use to describe you. I don't know if noble is one of them.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. Ellie May, fun fact for you before we go. There's a little bit of sort of down the side. Yu Shi is the traditional Chinese spirit or god of rain, also known or conflated with red wine. Yu Shi.
No, not you.
Is the god of rain in China. So that'll
just be one. You know, the Chinese have been fascinated with you for years and they've got a whole culture built around you, Ellie May. I don't know how you missed that. Yeah.
They work closely with the wind deity, Feng Popo. So they are. They're the two that you want to start speaking to if you want your rain and or wind this weekend.
Well, I know that me and Timo, our Chinese zodiac is the tiger. What's yours?
Ox.
I'd say tiger's more cool.
Ox literally sort of won the race. It was a rat that cheated to get ahead of it. So I'm sort of, I don't know.
Tiger eats both.
Tiger.
Tiger can't eat two oxes in one sitting. Oh, wait, there's two tigers.
Could
I'm screwed.
An ox and whatever the other animal was.
A rat, I think. It was rat that won it. Easy. We're getting sidetracked by Chinese mythology. Timo, in the meantime, where can the people find you?
Ooh, that's the Pond Sport Network for the IndyCar podcast. We're going to Long Beach and it's going to be a lot of fun. And then Metro Cross podcast, On the Curbs, Is It Fast, Paddock Priority, all the lovely usual places. And, oh yeah, social media, because we do that.
Very nice indeed. Ellie May, where can you be when you're not praying to Yushi?
Well, actually, I now want it to be a dry race, just so I can be like, see, you should have let me have my wet race prediction. And
still wouldn't be wild, but there we go. We've been over that.
But what race would it be wild then? Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although given the fact that it's raining a lot there at the moment, I don't think we can rule it out. If we had a race in the Atacama Desert, I'd allow you to have it will rain as a bold prediction. Driest place on earth. Although it doesn't like Extreme E race in the Atacama Desert or something. It feels like something
they did, but it didn't rain.
There we go. So exactly, it'd be a wild prediction there. Ellie May can also be found on Instagram. She's got the next edition of her Women in Motorsport series coming up soon, haven't you?
I might.
She might. There you are. Keep your eyes peeled. Turn on notifications for our Instagram posts.
Keep people in suspense.
If you want more of me, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok as @JesseOnCars. There'll be footage of me driving my MG into a river, fixing the Mustang, going to Goodwood Members Meet, and a whole variety of more stuff appearing across those in the coming days. Equally, a quick shout out to our listeners in and around Frankfurt in Germany. The nearby Weingut Munchhof sounds fantastic, and I wouldn't turn down a case of their wonderful Riesling that is sort of local to the region. Sounds pretty fantastic indeed. On that note, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the Chinese Grand Prix, and equally, if you're out in the UK enjoying Drive It Day on Sunday, give us a wave. I might be out and about. We look forward to seeing you for the review of the Chinese Grand Prix.